Welcome, everybody. This is the Between the Ropes podcast. I'm Brian Fritz. Appreciate everybody for listening in, for downloading, for subscribing to the Between the Ropes podcast. Been planning on this one for quite a while. Speaking with Bruce Prichard, formerly of WWE, formerly of TNA, of course, Brother Love back in the day as well. Bruce has now reemerged in the wrestling world. That's because he is a podcast star. And everybody can listen to him and Conrad Thompson doing the Something to Wrestle With podcast, which comes out every week, part of the MLW Radio Network. And we've been playing this for a while because Bruce and Conrad are going to be doing a show in Orlando April 1st, WrestleMania weekend. Now, when we first planned to do this, that show had not sold out. However, it's now sold out. But I still wanted to talk to Bruce because there's plenty to talk about. And we can talk about the podcast and his new career and his days in WWE and just talking about wrestling. Just a couple of guys talking about the wrestling business. So it was great being able to catch up with Bruce. Lots of stories, lots of knowledge with him. Something that he does on a regular basis on his own podcast, which I will tell everybody, please listen to and subscribe to as well. But it was great speaking with him. And like I said, he's got tons of knowledge about different things. And be able to talk to him about this and get his perspective on things that happened in the past and kind of relate that to today's wrestling. And by the way, Bruce is not somebody that I think hates today's wrestling. And I think that would be way too strong of a word. I think there are things like a lot of us that he might disagree with, but he definitely looks at it from a different perspective, considering that he was a part of the company and he has his own thoughts on the way the wrestling should be done, which we all do. It's just that his opinion comes from a background of somebody that actually worked in WWE for over 20 years. And you're talking about a guy that's been in the wrestling business now for over 40 years. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get to it. Here is my conversation with Bruce Prichard. He is Bruce Prichard, a man who has worn many hats in the wrestling business. And now he's a podcast star as well. He has joined the evil empire with all of us podcasters. How you doing, Bruce?
I'm doing great. Gee, I was trying to figure out who the hell you were introducing there for a second. I'm like, wait a minute. Evil? Yeah, that's me. But anyway.
I wasn't calling you specifically evil. I was saying that all of us podcasters are evil. I think that's the way it works, right?
I guess so. I never really, you know, considered myself a podcaster. I didn't think I would. If you had told me a year ago that I would be hosting a podcast, much less doing 500,000 downloads a week, I'd have laughed in your face.
It's amazing where the business just takes you with, you know, technology, and you get somebody in your ear and says, hey, you got stories, man. People want to hear them.
Yeah. People with a damn Alabama hick Roll Tide accent. My buddy Conrad Thompson, who's the co-host on my show, just he hounded me and says, man, all these stories you tell, that's a podcast. I said, no, it's not, because I'm not going to do it. And he kept on until I finally said, all right, I'll do it if you do it with me. And we are now having a blast doing this thing, and it's kind of crazy. You know, I don't think that very, very bad, Brian. You didn't mention Something to Wrestle With Bruce Prichard on MLW Radio.
I was about to do that. I was about to jump in there and say that. Trust me, that was coming.
Oh, okay. Well, so, trust me, you know I'm going to get my stuff in one way.
You're damn right you are, man. So, I, you know, when it comes to you and Conrad doing the podcast together, so I think half of it is him just trying to piss you off in the middle of the podcast just to see where you'll go. Do you agree with that?
Oh, he accomplishes that every episode without fail.
Between the name calling and the different things that he'll bring up and say, I don't think you're telling the truth, or, just pushing your buttons every which way, man.
He likes to push buttons. That's for damn sure. And he loves to get me pissed off. And from being friends and hanging out all the time, he knows what topics to touch on. And he waits until we're rolling before he actually goes there and just kind of nudges me a little bit. And yeah, he's a pain in the ass.
Well, that's good. He's keeping you on your toes, because I know otherwise you would never be controversial, right?
Not me. Not never. Never. I'm Mr. Go with the flow, get along with everybody, and just toe the line.
Exactly. So You know, you guys have been doing this for a little while now, and it's been very successful with the podcast. You guys have covered a lot of different things. And for people that for whatever reason don't realize this yet, so you leave it up to the fans each and every week on what you're going to be talking about. You put a poll out there that people can vote on, and then I believe it's like every Monday or Tuesday is when you decide this is what the podcast is going to be for this week. Is there anything in particular that you are looking forward to doing that you haven't touched on yet?
Houston wrestling. You know, it's crazy, and it's a funny story how we even got there. It's out of sheer laziness on my part because I don't want to have to worry about trying to book 52 guests a year and trying to come up with what's next. And genius on Conrad's part from the standpoint of throwing it in the listeners' hands and saying, here's four topics, you pick it, and we'll cover it. So I never really know what's coming. 9 times out of 10, I let him choose the topics, and as long, you know, he runs them by me to make sure I know something about them. That's debatable at best, but we throw it out there, and he researches his happy ass off, and we take it from there. But it's just kind of laziness, I guess, on my part, because I don't want to hunt people down, and it's different. Nobody else was doing that. Everybody else had the same, you know, group of guys that made the rounds.
Well, I don't want you doing the same damn thing as me, man. So I'm glad that you're not doing that. And it makes your podcast sound, you know, different and special. And I think that's the thing that comes out of it, is that we get your specialty of your more than 4 decades in the business, and you'll be able to talk about it.
Wow, when you say it that way, it makes me sound so old.
But you're not the old. That's the crazy thing, is that it sounds like, you know, oh my God, this guy's been in the business for more than 4 decades, which is true, but you're not that old.
I'm not. That's right. I'm going to be 54 next month. I feel old. But it's...
You can almost be a main eventer at WrestleMania if you keep this up.
In a couple years, I will be. In a couple years, I'll be right in that niche. And maybe, you know, if I badmouth WWE and go really controversial and just badmouth the hell out of them, I could for sure get a nod in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, at least, or at least induct somebody, I would think, you know. I mean, that's got to be coming, right?
Well, it would have to be, but no, I'm not even going to go there because I do love their Hall of Fame. And I'm sorry, I'm going off now, but in a kick, Rock and Roll Express is going in.
No, it's something that I think a lot of us were curious would ever happen. I know I was one of them thinking, are they ever going to put the man in? Like, out of nowhere, they put him in, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, they're deserving, and it's just nice to recognizing guys that made a contribution and made a splash in the business that weren't necessarily all WWE guys.
So who makes a return, or who pops up in the Hall of Fame first, yourself or Jim Cornette?
Oh God, Cornette by far.
Really?
Corny will be in. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, not even just going in necessarily. I mean, just to be there.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I might show up at some point. You never say never in this business. It's one thing I've learned. Never say never. But Corny definitely deserves to be in, and I hope he goes in sometime soon for his contributions to the business.
I do too. You know, I would love to see him there. I know that he has been, shall we say, hesitant in the past when it comes to certain things about that company, but he definitely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I would love to see him induct the Express. I'd love to see the Midnight Express get in as well. I mean, I just want to see Corny involved, and who knows? It seems like that could happen. It's not impossible.
You know, before Corny ever came to the WWF way back when, he swore to me that he would never work there as well. And I got him to come in, and it was on behalf of using the Heavenly Bodies at the time, and then maybe doing some other things and having some fun. And then he got there, and he got the Vince pitch for Yokozuna, which Vince he actually hit me out of the blue with it. I didn't know he was going to do that. And next thing you know, Cornette's living in Connecticut and all kinds of stuff.
That's the wrestling business for you.
Point being, never say never.
So when you were with WWF, is what it was at the time, how many different hats did you wear?
A few. When you work with Vince and Pat Patterson and I, especially in the early 90s, working with Vince hand in hand, we got together first thing in the morning and we stayed together all day and all night. A lot of times ending up 11:30, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, go get a few hours of sleep, come back, do it all over again. Every day. There were no such things as weekends. There were no such things as holidays. I remember Linda McMahon making Thanksgiving dinner and pies and getting the turkey and everything ready one year and doing the Beulah the Buzzard. Get out. And Vince just had having no concept of time. But I did, you know, we booked, we wrote the TV, we had to sit in on every meeting that Vince had with every department head. If somebody had a meeting with Vince, 9 times out of 10, we would be involved in it. If they came in with posters for the pay-per-view, we would have to sit there while we talked about what shade of blue we liked better. So you wore a lot of different hats. And the interesting thing is you get to see the many different facets of business itself and how little crazy ideas become reality and just become much bigger real things off of just somebody making a goofy statement sometimes.
So you start in the wrestling business at a very early age working in Houston, and in your 20s, you end up in WWF. So how does somebody that age, that young, become the right-hand man to Vince McMahon, basically?
I couldn't tell you. It's crazy because I started when I was 10 years old in Houston. And when I was 12 years old, I was the assistant director of the television show here in Houston, which consisted of giving cues, timing out the television show, and being around as an assistant to Paul Bosch. When I was 14, Boyd Pierce, who was the ring announcer in Houston, didn't show up due to a flood. And they didn't have anybody else to do it. And I used to plug my own stuff on the microphone with Boyd. So they said, you go ahead and do it. So I was ring announcing when I was 14. When I was 16, I was refereeing. When I was 18, I was running the place. And at around 24, actually even before that a little bit, Eddie Gilbert was in Mid-South at the time, UWF. He was going up to meet with Vince along with his girlfriend, Missy Hyatt, at the time. He knew that I was unhappy. He asked me if I was interested in going to New York, and I said yes. He talked to Vince about me, came back, and handed me a card with Vince's number on it, said give him a call. I did, and I remember the phone call with Vince, and Vince telling me that he was interested, he'd like to do something. I would have to relocate to Stamford, Connecticut. Do you have any problem relocating to Stamford, Connecticut? And without hesitation, I said yes. I had absolutely no idea where the hell Stamford, Connecticut was.
Nobody does.
Yeah, exactly. I hung up the phone, went and got my atlas out and looked through it. And that was before computers, kids. It was a road atlas. There are maps. There are these things. It was on paper. And you look and you see where things are. And I was like, God damn, that's up there a little bit. But I didn't hesitate. I stayed after him, and I went up. I didn't have a job description. He put me around department to department and told me, you know, find what you enjoy. See where you think you would fit best. And I always loved television. I always loved putting TV together, producing, writing, all the above. But I didn't know those actually had titles to them. I was just the guy that put the TV shows together. And I landed in TV and I never got out. And it was me and Joel Watts, and Joel left after a few months, and it was just me. And I just opened my mouth and got out there. And I was either smart enough or dumb enough to disagree with Vince a lot and to throw another way of looking at it at him an awful lot.
Yeah, and that's the fine line is, you know, when it comes to working with Vince. So what was that relationship like? And like I said, you're very open in the way that you're going to talk about things. Was there ever a thought in your mind saying, maybe I shouldn't say this? Or was it just in your nature to say, you know what, I'm going to be open and honest with this guy, and we'll see what happens.
Well, it was in my nature to just say what the hell was on my mind, which got me in trouble an awful lot, okay? I wouldn't suggest it for everybody. However, I spoke my mind. Now, over the years, I learned how to speak my mind a little bit differently and maybe to temper it with two words, the most valuable two words I ever learned in my life from Pat Patterson, and that was, what if? Instead of saying that sucks or that's the shit, you say, okay, what if? And have an alternative, have another idea, have a suggestion versus just crapping on someone else's idea. Because that's easy to do. But to be able to offer an alternative and be able to take everything else into consideration and put it together and make it all work, that was the tricky part. And once I learned that, it was a little more friendly, I guess you could say, because Vince and I would have arguments. I mean, bad arguments. And I kind of discovered that. I'll call it an art.
An art of saying no to Vince McMahon.
But, is to say, what if? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing I think people wonder about today. And I know you haven't been there since 2008, but there's a lot of people wondering in today's climate with when it comes to the creative team there and even the grand scope of it, that is, are there people that will actually say no to Vince McMahon, or will they say no in a roundabout way to present other things the way that you have, or is it more of a, we're just going to say yes because he's the boss kind of climate?
I don't know. Like you said, I haven't been there since 2008. I don't know. I do know Vince in that he appreciates people disagreeing with him as long as they have an alternative and as long as they're willing to, once you finish discussing it, accepting the outcome and moving forward. And that's important as well. If you don't get your way, you hear it out, you argue it out back and forth, but once a decision is made, you've got to go out and deliver those marching orders as if that came out of your head. So I don't know what the atmosphere is today. I do know that Vince would prefer, look, if everybody agrees with him, what good are they?
Yeah.
If you're surrounded by yes men, you don't need any of them. And I know that he would rather have people pitching him ideas so that he can either shit all over them or expound upon them and make them his own. That's what the guy does. And I've heard since, God, 1983, the same rap on Vince McMahon. He's out of touch. He's killing the business. He doesn't have a clue what the hell's going on in the real world. They said that in 1983. When he started to take over the wrestling business, this kid's going to kill it. Doesn't know what the hell he's doing. He doesn't have touch with reality. I heard it when I got there in 1987. I heard it in the early 90s, mid 90s, Attitude Era, 2000. I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb here a little bit. I think the guy knows what he's doing.
Possibly.
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, it's being around him and shit. People laughed. If you were to have been a part of the conversations in the late 80s, where he would talk about in early 90s, talking about taking the company public, talking about owning a network and having his own network. These are conversations that he had in late 80s, early 90s, that we all looked at him like, okay, what's the old man smoking? But once he would do this stuff, you stop doubting him and you just said, okay, guys, strap in because it's going to be a fun ride.
So when things were changing, you know, during the Attitude Era, and we saw things, you know, presented in a manner that we had never seen before really in the wrestling business, what was that process like, you know, working within WWF and working with Vince then? Because it seemed like there were so many different ideas that people were receptive to, and it was like, okay, the bigger, the better, the wilder, you know, everything's on the table now.
It was a time of a lot of time of experimenting. That's yes, for sure. But it was, the business constantly evolves, and what worked in the 80s, Hulk Hogan, the cartoon characters, as audiences got older, they started to puke some of that stuff back up. And we tried to do the new generation crap. They didn't really buy that. And funny thing happens to you when you get the shit beat out of you. And we were getting our asses kicked on a weekly basis by WCW that was providing edgier content, a different feel to their program. And we decided, well, what we're doing ain't working. And now that they have a real choice and we have competition, not on Saturday night at 6:05, we got real competition head up with us. We got to change the way we do business. So that decision had to be made and was made and, you know, got back in the game. I think today, when you look at things, what's missing is that competition. What's missing is that drive to want to fight back and to win. What are they really winning right now? They're the top dog.
And that's the problem, I think, is trying to find that competition. Even when they try to do like this, you know, they've done a brand split, and I understand why they do it, but it's not competition. I mean, we still know it's all still under the same WWE banner. So it's tough to really generate that competition, not only from, you know, against somebody else, but from within, I think, with the talent to push them even more to try to accomplish bigger and better things.
Exactly. And you add to that within the programs, you're advertising your, quote, competition, the other brands. They co-mingle with little to no explanation at times. The original idea behind splitting of the brands and the original idea of buying WCW back in the day was to actually have real competition, to split the brands, to have separate writing teams, separate marketing team, everything with WCW and WWF. Once they realized what they had purchased and the fact that this ain't working because we didn't buy the WCW that people identified with, we bought the library and we bought a few assets. So it didn't work. I mean, it sucked and people weren't buying it. So we had to punt and do something else. But had we been given the opportunity to actually create something unique unto itself and not commingle, have a different leader, if you will, that is going to make the decisions, and it all doesn't have to be cleared through Vince. Let Vince, yeah, pick one. Vince, you want WWF or do you want WCW? And let somebody else either succeed or fail with the other brand.
Now,
and I think that would be interesting.
So as someone like yourself who's enjoyed telling stories your entire life and being part of that process, was there one or two storylines in particular that you enjoyed above all other when you were working for the company?
I really, obviously, the Kane storyline with Undertaker is probably my all-time favorite story, the one I had the most fun with because it came out of my messed up head. And just being able to tell that whole complete story of the Undertaker and his brother and him taking his brother's name in memory of him dying, but he actually wasn't dead. He was told he was dead by this evil mortician, Paul Bearer, and just all the many layers of that I loved. I also, another favorite of mine was the evolution of JBL. When we took John Layfield from the APA and a tag team guy that was in a lot of ways very one-dimensional and took his real-life persona of John Layfield, an extremely bright and successful businessman in the real world, and told that story on air, that was a hell of an evolution. And I probably liked that one the most because John and I were also friends, and Eddie Guerrero being a huge factor in that. And I've always loved working with Eddie.
Yeah. And that was at a period too, where I know a lot of people were wondering, you know, who are going to be the stars of the company because some guys had left, there were some injuries at the time. And right. It was just a way to kind of, hey, we've got talent here. It's just we've got to repurpose it and put it in a manner to where they are stars. It was, you know, I think JBL and Eddie Guerrero were both examples of guys that got made because everybody got pushed into a corner and saying, okay, well, we can use these guys and just push them up a level. We'll make something happen. And they worked for both of those guys.
Exactly. And it's a great example of giving guys opportunity and talent taking that opportunity and making the most of it. Because through that time, there were a lot of people that were given opportunity. Some did well, some didn't do so well. And the guys that we thought, some of them that we thought would do great, kind of shit the bed. And then there are others that excelled, took that opportunity and just excelled. People, I mean, when we did the Layfield experiment, let's call it, it was a success in my opinion. People just, oh my God, they crapped all over it. Because what are you going to, he's an APA, he's a mid-card guy at best, he'll never make it, you're just repackaging Bradshaw. And we fought through it. All of a sudden, the naysayers began to hate the character JBL in a way that you hate a heel. And so we turned them into fans again. That, well, I don't like the guy because you did this, because you did that. Well, it's like, thank you. Awesome. Appreciate that.
But how difficult is that now? Because the audience is just so much different, so much smarter. And, you know, WWE, you know, will tell you like, well, there's not really true babyface or heels. It's all about just evoking an emotion from the audience. I mean, they won't necessarily directly tell you that, but they'll have some of their guys will say that, and they'll say, hey, we just want to get a reaction from our crowd. And it's in some, you know, extent, it's a little bit of a different game for the way that they explain it of babyfaces and heels.
The world has changed. However, as the world changed, what's old, you know, is new once again, and what worked long ago all of a sudden works all over. You take our recent election here in the States. You had essentially two heels vying for the most powerful land in the world. I mean, for the most powerful position in the world. They were both heels. So you had to choose which one, okay, who's the more popular heel? And that's who won. They both got reaction. One, I do think that people do look at things still a little bit black and white, but unfortunately there is a lot of gray out there. I think people want somebody to boo. I think people want someone to root for and cheer for. I love John Cena. I think John Cena is absolutely excellent at what he does. In his audience, you either have people that feel very strong. They feel strongly one way or another. They either love him or they hate him. But then there's guys kind of in the middle. I think Roman Reigns is one of those guys that's in the middle. They don't know how to feel about him.
Yeah.
They don't know if they love him. And they don't know why they're booing him. But Daniel Bryan, you love. Chris Jericho, I think, is probably the best heel in the business right now, other than Brock Lesnar. But Brock, they love because he's a badass. But Jericho goes out and he's a heel in everything that he does.
But sometimes we love
losing.
Sometimes we love the heel because they're just so damn good at what they do, or it's somebody that's been around for a while that we just appreciate. And become, you get to this legendary status where it's just like, yeah, I know I'm supposed to boo you, but at the same time, you know what? I really love you, man.
I enjoy watching you do what you do.
Yeah.
And that's the catch 22. And that's why I love there's little nuanced things that Jericho does that will elicit that, oh, you asshole vibe from the audience. It's, you got to respect him because he is so damn good. And you kind of like him because he is so damn good. But there's that one little part that you go, oh, man, that was a dick thing to do.
Yeah, and it all goes into kind of where WWE is at right now, because, you know, they're a PG content, and I understand why in this culture and the partnerships that they want, but there's times where you're sitting there going, man, it's a little bit too watered down, a little bit too homogenized, it's a little too much 50-50, where it's like, I want to try to get behind different things, I want to get behind different people, and you're just kind of waiting for them to pull the trigger on something that you're not sure if it's ever going to happen again in today's culture.
And it's a business. So they're looking at it from a dollar and cent standpoint. Advertisers, sponsors that want to be a part of the company, they don't want that controversy. However, I do believe that there is some available space out there right now for somebody that does want to tell stories of good versus bad. I don't know if you watch Lucha Underground, but I watch Lucha Underground. I enjoy the hell out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there. It's bizarre. Nobody believes that this is real. They let you know right up front. They tell you, man, this is entertainment. We're going to be out there with our stuff. And they tell their stories. So it's a lot of fun, but it's not serious. Boy, that guy, you know, that Drago, they burned him up. Nobody believes that.
Well, that goes into like the whole broken Matt Hardy thing, where he had this crazy ass idea that nobody ever believed would work. And you're wondering, what the hell is this guy doing? And then now it's arguably the biggest thing in wrestling, and it just caught on like wildfire. And you're like, give him all the props in the world for, you know, reinventing himself.
Yeah. You can't look away.
Yeah.
You sit there and you watch it. I thought that the 2 hour show they did was a little too much.
A little.
But the specials that they did and the breaks in and out, I thought were masterpieces. And I love the fact that Matt reinvented himself and Jeff Hardy as well. All of a sudden, people that said, well, Jeff Hardy can't talk, you know, he doesn't have any personality. All of a sudden, you're seeing all this personality out of Jeff as well. And Jeff was the unsung hero of a lot of that.
Yeah. Now I'm wondering what is going to happen with them from a standpoint of, and we'll find out here soon enough, like, you know, is TNA going to be their home, or, you know, WWE's courting them? And I sit there and I go, okay, cool, if you're on a bigger stage, but I don't know if that'd be the same act. And that's the big question.
It is. I don't think that it would be the same act, because that act needs a little bit of time to tell its story and to get over. And I'm not sure that WWE can devote that kind of time to it.
And I don't know how that audience would react to it, because it's only, you know, a certain percentage of WWE fans that know what the hell's going on. If broken Matt Hardy showed up in a WWE ring, I think a lot of people are going, what the hell is going on here?
It's like my son many years ago, when the first time The Rock came back at WrestleMania, and my kids were much younger. My son's watching TV and goes, oh, hey, cool, the WWE got Dwayne Johnson. He didn't know The Rock. Mm. He had no clue who the hell The Rock was. To him, it was Dwayne Johnson, the movie star, on a WWE program playing The Rock. And I found that fascinating, because it's my life. But I remember calling Vince and saying, hey, I just want to share a little bit of feedback with you. I said, here's your core audience. Here's the demo that you guys are going after. And here's what one of them said. And I get it. It's my kid, but man, he should know.
Mm-hmm.
And his initial reaction wasn't, oh, hey, cool, The Rock's back. It was, oh, hey, cool, WWE got Dwayne Johnson.
That's amazing.
And I was taken aback. But your audience, every 10 years, you got a brand new audience coming through.
Yeah. So when did you know that The Rock was going to be this megastar that he became?
Some guys have it and some guys don't. Rock always had it. I think that when we did the Nation of Domination issue with DX, with Triple H and those guys, they used to go out on Raw and banter back and forth. Hunter would go off script and he would take digs at Rock. personal inside digs, drove Rock insane because he was company guy, young guy. I'm not going to go off script. I'm going to do what I'm told to do. And he would come back and he would throw the script in my face. And I'm doing what I'm told to do. And this guy's not doing, he's not sticking to it. I said, well, here's the deal. It's live. Now, he's back there getting his ass chewed by Vince, but it's already gone. If you can take the ass chewing, and by the way, if it's better and it gets over and you get the reaction, you're going to be a hero. Now, if it sucks, be ready for the ass chewing. And you got to be able to take that. That's the gamble you take. But the last two words I said to him were, it's live. And he went out and he started sparring live with Triple H, going back and forth. And a star was born. He put a microphone in his hand and let him go. He had some great stuff that was written for him, but his off the cuff stuff and his delivery and his timing were just impeccable. He just had it.
Yeah. Is he the most versatile talent that you've ever worked with?
He's one of the greatest I've ever worked with. Yeah. I think that as you say, talent, he probably has the most talent of anybody. There were a lot of greats through the years, but to be able to do anything, he's up there at the top.
Was there somebody in particular that stands out that you really thought this guy has it? He is going to be something big that it just never happened for whatever reason?
That didn't make it on the big stage. That's a tough one because I think a lot of them got to that point. There were a lot of guys, I go back to Mick Foley, that Vince said he would never work for me because all he had ever seen him do was those crazy bumps. Vince didn't want him in the company.
Yeah.
Had no desire. And JR and I were adamant that, would you just meet the guy and talk to him and see if you like him? He doesn't have to take those crazy bumps. I say that, and then you look at what he's famous for.
Right.
But there were guys like that. Triple H, mid-card at best, mm-hmm. was the term used to describe him often. And he made it. I think that Steve Austin, how the hell is that guy ever going to get over with that silly Texas accent?
Yeah, and just going out there in black boots and black trunks.
Yeah. You know, that's a quote from Vince McMahon. Bischoff gets credit for it, but that was Vince. Didn't see it. What's special about him? Steve went out and showed everybody what was special about him. We put a microphone in his hand, and he tore the house down every night in the house shows with Shawn Michaels. He made people notice him. But as far as guys that we had high hopes for, I think we had high hopes for Johnny B. Bad, Mark Mero to come in. We had some high hopes for him. We had higher hopes for Vader. I think Sid could have been 100 times what he was if he had just relaxed a little bit and didn't have a passion for softball the way he does. There are a few guys like that that you think if only you could have tweaked a few things, they might have had more success. There were guys that were very successful all over the world. You know, I mentioned Vader. But his run in the WWE wasn't comparable to his run elsewhere.
Yeah. I'm sure you've had thousands of ideas that have popped through your head. Is there one particular idea or storyline or something that you look back at the most and that you thought would have been successful, but they never ran with?
Yeah. Hulk Hogan and Mr. America. I loved it. Complete ripoff of Dusty Rhodes and Dusty Rhodes and the Midnight Rider deal that he did in Florida. But it was the whole storyline. I had it all mapped out. I loved it. And then Hulk and Vince got into it over payoffs and money discrepancies and what have you. And Hulk left.
Yeah.
So that was one that, had we been able to play that out as we had laid out, I think would have been, at the time, for the WWE, one of those that they say, oh, hey, that was fun. That was good. That was fun.
How long would that have lasted if it had gone the way you wanted?
Probably would have got us to WrestleMania again the next year, and Hogan left in June or July.
Man, that would... And that's crazy to think of a storyline like that, because I think the last storyline that was even close to being that long, I guess you could put this in the category, was the first, you know, Rock Cena match. But that was one that got announced the day after Mania, but it was kind of, it wasn't an every week storyline. It was just like, all right, let's throw this back out there, and here comes Rock back for a little while or whatever. It wasn't a continuous storyline. The last continuous storyline might have been, what, Sting in NWO? WCW?
God. I couldn't even tell you. But we had a few in WWE. Unfortunately, when we would map something out for 6 months to a year, you would map it out, and you could write it all out and pitch it, and, oh, God damn, that's great. I love it. And then get to a production meeting, and your 8 month story arc becomes a 2.5 week program. And you're scratching your head, walking out of the meeting, going, what the hell happened? And then 4 weeks after that, you're being screamed at for, we need longer term thinking. You guys have to be out there. You can't do this just hotshot crap. But we did. But essentially, man, we had the next 3 months written, and you crammed it into one night. And
yeah, well, that's the funny thing is that, like, when you talk about, like, Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho, that was supposed to be like a one match payoff, and it turned into what, like 7 months?
Yeah. And but that's where the fun is, when you are constantly trying to come up with swerves and curves, and just when you think we're going to turn left, we turn right, and then bang a U-ey. They get invested in the storyline, and then you have a big blow-off, and a blow-off actually means something. But now you have a blow-off, and you have a blow-off on what the hell they call them now, specials. Or, you know,
yeah,
you
special event, whatever the hell they are
anymore. But you have a special event on Sunday, the big blow-off, and then they have a return on Monday.
Right.
It's like, well, okay. What just happened?
We got to fill up that TV time.
Yeah. Did anything mean anything? So I do believe that a lot of the long-term story arc storytelling is missing today.
And the funny thing is I think you can make an argument that the best storyline in WWF history was a long-term one, and that was Hogan and Savage. That went a whole year.
Right. And we had it plotted out for a whole year. We did on our podcast, I think our second or third one, I went through the whole Mega Powers Explode, and you can see each point that only a couple of us knew about. The talent obviously knew, because they knew what to do. Sometimes they didn't even know what the hell they were doing it for. But we knew in our mind, this is the story we're going to tell when we get to WrestleMania. Hogan putting his hand up to steady Liz, and he touches her butt. To Hogan, oh my God, brother, your delts are so big. I had to steady her. I thought she was going to fall off. You were so swollen. To Savage, him busting his eye, brother, grabbing at my Elizabeth. There's two sides to every story, especially when there's a woman involved. So we told these stories for a long period of time, slowly. But then when you go back and you put it all together, people went, oh, hey, wow, I get it. You know what? I thought there was something funny there. And then they pay more attention to the shows as they go on, because they're afraid they're missing something.
Yeah. And it's funny, because it's those little details that obviously make these storylines. And that's the thing that I wonder about today. They're missing, because, you know, there'll be fans remember the intricate details. And it feels like there's a lot of time when WWE doesn't, where it's just like, They go against something that happened 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, maybe a little bit longer, but a lot of times it's closer, and you're sitting going, well, wait a second. Didn't that just happen? And it's almost like, nah, forget about that. That's in the past. We're in the present now.
If I were to give Vince McMahon one critique and the WWE one critique, is that too often things are not allowed to fail. There will be a feeling that if they start something, Vince may get a feeling or somebody may get a feeling, well, that didn't go exactly as planned. Instead of go ahead and play it out, maybe that didn't work as well as we wanted it to, or maybe you just didn't feel it worked as well as you wanted it to. We've still got these other parts of the story. Let's go ahead and tell the rest of them and let's see if it works or maybe it doesn't. But the worst that can happen is obviously it can fail, but you'll never know if you cut it off midway through.
Yeah. How much time do you think needs to be given to an idea, to some kind of a storyline, to truly know if it's catching on or if it's just not going to work?
You know, I back in the old days, I would say probably 4 to 6 weeks. Nowadays, I would say 3 to 4.
Yeah.
You just got to give it some time to allow people to buy into it, get hooked, give them a couple of things to sink their teeth into.
Yeah. And it's so much tougher these days because us fans think we know everything and we don't. You know, there's times where obviously it is a smarter audience, but at the same time, I think we are guilty of not always giving something the chance that maybe it deserves. Maybe it is going to go in a direction they don't really realize. And everybody's going to be skeptical of the powers of be on this ride that they might be taking you on.
Exactly. And just go for it. Try it. With the network and everything that they have now, they're not going to lose the audience.
Yeah.
They're going to be there. So I think they have the ability, especially now, with so much time that they can experiment and they can have fun with some storylines and be able to tell them. You look at Jericho and Owens. Right now, that story has been told very well. People, you know, they all thought that the blow up was going to take place before the Royal Rumble. Then, it's going to take place at the Rumble. They're still telling that story. And they'll blow it up just in time for WrestleMania. You'll have your big match at WrestleMania. But I enjoy that because it's been a story that people are anticipating the blow up.
Yeah.
And they're waiting. Oh, this is when they're going to do it. You know, hey, you watch. This is where so-and-so is going to turn on so-and-so. And then it doesn't happen. So you're going to tune in next week. So, well, they're going to do it next week. And it's like, oh, my God, are they ever going to do it? And just when you give up and you think, oh, man, they're never going to do it, bam, they surprise you out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's the best storytelling.
So put on your creative / booker hat. When it comes to WrestleMania, how would you have done it this year when it comes to maybe the top 3 or 4 matches?
Wow. They've been building, you know, Seth and Triple H forever. That's a natural. I really would have liked to have seen Cena and Undertaker. I still don't know what the hell they're going to do there. I don't see it with Cena as the champion, but I think that would have been a natural to do. It's great to have Brock and Goldberg. There's a little bit of me that would have liked to have had also Undertaker Brock in there just so Undertaker could get a win back. I don't see that ever happening again, but that would have been nice too, just for the nostalgia in me.
Maybe that's next year when they go back to New Orleans.
Maybe.
If Taker's still, you know, going then. That's the question because like yourself, I thought they were going to do Cena and Taker this year. It sure doesn't feel like they're going to. And I'm kind of thinking, well, if you don't do it this year, I don't know how many more matches Taker has left in him. And that's a big nostalgia match that we want to see. I know a lot of people wanted to see Taker against Sting, and they waited too long for it to ever happen. And for whatever reason, they decided that wasn't the match they wanted to do.
Right. And I'm not sure that would have. And I agree with them on that, by the way, because I felt that it wasn't going to be the match that people wanted to see. People wanted to see the old Sting and the old Undertaker.
Right.
I don't think that they wanted to see the current incarnation of Sting, what he was at the time, with Undertaker. Undertaker to me is ageless. And I told him this for years. We can wheel him down there in a wheelchair at 70 years old, and all he has to do is get in the ring and give somebody a choke slam, and they're going to love him.
Right.
And pose. And I said, that's all you got to do, man.
Just stand there.
Stand there. We can prop him up against something. And you can like float him down to the ring and then get him, you know, cut away to the crowd, get him in the ring, prop him up, choke slam somebody, and get him back there. I mean, that was always a standing joke with him. And he was like, no, that ain't going to be me. The issue with Taker is he wants to deliver that great match.
Right.
If he's going to be in the ring, he wants to deliver the great match.
And that's the thing that I respect a lot about him, is that he's taking pride in his work and he doesn't want to be out there for too long. But at the same time, he loves the business. This is what he's done.
Right. And he doesn't want to be out there and have a half-assed match. That's the same thing with Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels is exactly the same way. Shawn doesn't want to. I said the same thing about Shawn, too, by the way. I was like, dude, you can go out there. You don't have to have that Shawn Michaels match every time. You can go out there, and the analogy I used was Bruiser and Crusher in Chicago. I said, you can go out there and just do a couple things and have guys bump all around you, and they're still going to love you. But Shawn's pride and his ego is such that he's not going to go out there and have a crappy match. He wants to have the Shawn Michaels match. And in his mind, if he can't have the Shawn Michaels match, he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing with them, but I also believe that the audience will forgive him, and the audience just wants to see them in the ring one more time.
So as we wind down here, you know, obviously you spent, I believe it was 22 years working for WWE. Do you miss it? Do you wish you were still there?
There are times that I miss it, and there are times that I don't miss it at all. Monday nights at 10 o'clock when I can go to bed, that's great. Yeah. There are parts of it that I miss, but there's other things. I don't miss being on the road 4 days a week, every single week of your life, and being able to go to your kids' soccer games and your kids' wrestling meets. I wouldn't have been able to experience a lot of that had I been there. So it's kind of a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. Do you think you would fit in with today's culture when it comes to like a creative team that isn't very small, like you were a part of, and now it's, you know, what is it, like 20 people, maybe even more?
That would probably drive me nuts. It drove me nuts when there were 5 people. it's funny because over the years, we always tried to bring more people in because you get burnt. And you find yourself pitching the same ideas with new twists, and you want more ideas. You want more input. And it's a personality deal that they have to fit in into that culture, and culture is the right word for it. I don't know if I would fit into it. I would hope that I'd be smart enough that I could. I just don't really have any desire right now to do that. I loved my time there. I had a great run, a lot of great friends, and I don't regret anything. I really don't. I had a blast.
Well, you've moved on to becoming a podcast star now. So, everybody can, and that's your way of staying in the business.
Well, it is. And I never dreamed that, man. I had moved on. I was, you know, working with Conrad Thompson in mortgages and doing that, and that's our day job. And then all of a sudden we're doing this that is our part-time deal that we do after hours that is now consuming our lives. So it's funny how things work out and come back around. Just when you get out, they pull you back in.
Yes, I know. You've become big enough now to where it will have something to wrestle with podcast of a special broadcast. April 1st, back booth in Orlando. It will be that Saturday night after NXT TakeOver, so you guys don't even start till 11:30 Eastern, so everybody can get there, the live show with you and Conrad. People can get tickets, or they could get tickets at notarib.com, but there's no more tickets, are there?
There aren't. It's crazy. You know, you talk about doing a podcast and having 500,000 people download and listen to you every week. That's nuts, man. I never in a million years dreamed that. But to do a live show, have tickets go on sale on Black Friday in November. End of November, our tickets went on sale. We sold out the second week of January. We hadn't even really done the big push yet. So, well, you know, man, we had called you and talked about, hey, as we get closer to this, I'd love to be able to do an interview with you.
Well, we set this up weeks ago to promote this, and then now that we're doing it, it's like, well, guess what? It's already sold out.
Which is a great problem to have. So we're very pleased. We were excited, man.
So you got to add a second show, right? The one after WrestleMania or one after Raw.
Well, we're not going to do that. Okay. You never know where I'm going to pop up. I will be at WrestleCon both Friday and Saturday. You never know where I'm going to pop up on Sunday, who shows, you know, that I might like stop by and say hello at. And then we are going to do one in New York for SummerSlam. We're going to do Houston for Survivor Series and Philadelphia for Royal Rumble next year. So we're booking, booking New York this week and probably booking Houston this week or next week as well. So we're going to be out there with these live shows and do them around the big WWE event. So if you're planning on going to one of the big WWE special events, then make your plans to come see us. The other cool thing about our show, everyone will be different because just like our podcast, we're going to do topics. We're going to let the audience decide. And Conrad and I couldn't do something the same twice if our life depended on it.
In the meantime, everybody can, of course, listen to the Something to Wrestle With podcast, part of MLW Radio. Everybody can find it on iTunes. Subscribe there. I really appreciate the time, Bruce. Continued success. And I'm hoping we can do this again some other time. I know I probably talked your ear off here a little bit, and I definitely would like to do it again.
Well, Brian, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on. I greatly appreciate it. And anytime at all. Happy to do it. And when you spell my name, I just want to make sure that you don't put a T in Pritchard. You put a T on your back, and you can go to brucepritchard.com, by God, and get one of my great T-shirts that is also exploded. And if you told me I'd be doing that a year ago,
there you go.
I also would have said you were crazy.
I like it. The salesman and you. Get the everybody get the podcast, buy the T-shirts, and come see me at WrestleCon.
I love it.
A great conversation with Bruce Pritchard, and we didn't even talk about Brother Love. I don't even know how we did that. I never brought up Brother Love for that almost hour-long conversation, and I do appreciate Bruce for giving me that much time, and I'll definitely have him on the podcast again. Once again, everybody can check out the Something to Wrestle With podcast, part of MLW Radio. You can subscribe to that as well. Plus, Conrad Thompson is his co-host on that podcast. Once again, I urge everybody to check that out. And of course, continue to check out the Between the Ropes podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, rate and review the podcast. Give us stars because we love stars and stars help us out. And if you really want to help out Between the Ropes, please support us on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/Between the Ropes. Anything that you feel comfortable in sharing monetarily helps us continue doing this podcast. So thanks everybody for all of the support. Michael and I will be back on Wednesday night this week with the regular Between the Ropes podcast, talking about everything going on this past week in news, plus more WrestleMania talk and lots more. In fact, we're even going to throw it out there. We're going to get back to start taking questions from everybody as well. So be on the lookout for that. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Brian Fritz. And you can also follow Between the Ropes on Twitter. Just use, just go to at Between the Ropes and use hashtag AskBTR for your questions on Twitter. So thanks again, everybody, for listening, for subscribing. Appreciate all the support. And I'll talk to you next time right here, Between the Ropes.